I don't wanna go to work. I just wanna chill and play all day. Look him dead in the face and say, I wish I could just be still asleep while you work.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Jobs Blow podcast with Brianna and Josh.
The podcast for dreamers with day jobs.
We're so glad to be back at the Comic Strip Live to tell yet another inspiring story from someone pursuing their dream job.
Yes, Josh, because as the saying goes, when you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
I like that. It's inspiration.
True, right?
Frustration.
We're given inspiration, but we're just not given that long,
line again.
Really long.
I love the alliteration, the rhyming of that, actually.
Yeah. Well, we're moving on. Things are changing. 2020 is right around the corner.
Hi, Brianna.
Hey, Josh.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I saw you 3 days ago.
I know. And now we're back. So not a lot has happened.
No.
Except that Ella had an amazing dance recital at Alvin Ailey.
I saw the video and it was very, very good.
Yes.
Good job, Ella.
Yeah, she did a great job. Oh, and you know who was there?
Oh, who?
You know the movie The Warriors from the 70s?
Yeah.
Okay, remember the guy that's like, Warriors, come out and play? That creepy, the little guy?
Get out of here.
He had a kid in that class and he's like 68, I think.
What? Did you say hi?
I almost went up to him and was like, dude, come on. You got to come on my
podcast. Who's the other guy you keep seeing?
Jean Reno had a kid, you know, from The Professional. He also had I'm talking to our guest, has a kid that was in her class, but that kid didn't show up the last two times.
No, but you also keep being tempted to go over there and say hi to him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just
well,
do it.
You know, we have the whole French connection
she
now
did.
With my
he
job.
Wasn't in French connection. What are you
no,
talking?
My French connection.
Oh, your French connection.
Cookies.
My bad.
The cookies. The cookies.
Who, Michelle and Augustine?
Michelle and Augustine.
Why do you say it like Ohioan?
I say it for Americans because the name does not resonate otherwise.
Yeah, but they should know it. Teach it to them so that they know how to say it correct. Look, Citarella, you know Citarella, the store they have? They sell them right there, you know?
They sell
people
them
should know. You don't want
they have them
butchering
in food
the
cellar.
Name.
They have them all
Michelle
over.
Michelle et Augustine.
Augustine.
It's not Augustine. It's Teen. The E
is
not
Jewish.
Necessary.
It's not Teen.
It's not necessary.
Oh,
jeez. Speak le Montreal French because this is all I know, but I don't really know, you know?
Okay, Josh, how are you?
They're delicious cookies.
They are delicious.
Thanks for sponsoring us, guys.
Yes.
Really appreciate it.
Josh, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm just like amazed that we did this. We did it, Brianna. I mean, we talk to people every week about their jobs, their dreams, their pursuits, and it's really crazy to see, like, this conversation we had, 15 months ago? And then this year we started it, 2019. What are we at? Episode 43.
Yeah.
This is our last record.
And we didn't start in January. We didn't launch until February.
Right,
so
right.
You know,
but
we
still,
almost launched weekly.
Which, yeah, just about weekly. I mean, since we started, right? And 43 episodes in a year. I'm excited for the possibilities, obviously, moving forward. But just like this whole thing coming together, it's exactly what we talked to people about. And we did it too.
Right. And one of the best things about this has been reuniting with people we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And that brings me to
giving them a voice, too, like for projects and businesses that they're working on. And also look at how, you know, I was talking about this the other day. You got an opportunity to just talk. Every time you're talking to someone now, you're thinking, oh, is this going to be someone that could maybe come on my podcast and interview? And some of them are, you know, and I say, too, for everyone out there, especially our North Dakota fan base, you know, some people contact me and say, oh, you know, I'd love to come on. And they are good guests, but we just can't do the call-ins anymore. They're just too cumbersome. So if you are coming to New York and you have a good idea or a story you want to tell, definitely reach out. Please keep reviewing, subscribing, sharing word of mouth, posting all you can, and send us emails if there's anything you like or don't like, and so we can keep going.
Yes. And again, it brings us back to our show today because I've reunited with a friend that I haven't seen. We don't even know. We know it's been since pre-babies, and we both had our baby. I had baby that she had babies in 2008. So today's guest is Broadway producer Jana Nagel, and the title of the show is Another Stage in Her Career. And welcome, Jana.
Love that title.
Yes. Jana and I met in 1994.
I can't even believe that.
Legit one of my oldest New York City friends.
Absolutely. We were babies then.
We were. And now we have babies who are not babies anymore.
Exactly, who are going to leave us too soon.
Yes. We had a whole discussion about the fact that they are closer to the age we were when we met than we are. Mm-hmm. So it's wow. a little crazy. But
I'm never leaving my kid. If they go to college, I'm going.
No,
back.
I am too.
I'm going back to I do am. It right. Mm. To do
yeah.
it right.
Yeah.
But I met Jaina because when I did an internship at Good Morning America, I lived in a woman's home. It was a Salvation Army home for women. And I met a young lady who was a plus size model mm-hmm. from North Carolina. I was going to come back and live with her after I finished school. And before I made it back, she called me and said, I'm going back to North Carolina, but I found a friend for you so you can live with her.
And so she dumped you off onto somebody
yes,
else.
Yes. And that friend's name was Tracy. And Cindy, the original roommate, had met Tracy through Jaina. So when I came to the city, Tracy introduced me to Jaina. And she lived in the West Village. They lived in a teeny tiny apartment in the West Village. And we'd go down there to party and then come back up to our apartment on the Upper East Side that was more affordable and bigger.
Yeah, how long have you been in New York?
Since 1993.
Oh, so a little earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not much earlier, but a little bit.
Just a yeah. wee bit.
Wow, 93. Mm-hmm. What Taylor Dane song was coming out that year?
Give Me Shelter. It might have been that one.
That was our favorite song. If you're listening along up till this point, you know why. That is an Easter egg for that episode. Yes. So that's cool. Cool. Yeah. And you know what? She's great with the titles, right?
I love the title.
Right. Well, this is a cool story. So Jaina's got a really cool story. It is Broadway related. We both love Broadway. We love performing.
We've had a lot of Broadway people on our show, off Broadway, Broadway. Josh is in Drunk Shakespeare off Broadway.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Very fun. Yeah.
He just had his 700th show.
Amazing.
She does my PR.
What's your favorite Shakespeare play?
We most of the time do Macbeth. But as far as like watch, I like Hamlet.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But we do Macbeth and, you know, quite often, and that's a great story. And thank you for always promoting that. I appreciate it.
It's something to be proud of.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very cool. You want to come? You can come.
Yeah,
can
totally. I want to check it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to do Henry V. That's my favorite.
Actually, some of the actors in the troupe have Henry V monologues in their repertoire that they do. Mm-hmm. And there are opportunities throughout the show, if you've seen the show, where they can do any monologue they want from all of Shakespeare. And oftentimes they do those, you know, St. Christmas Day.
I'm a sucker for that speech.
Yeah, it's so good.
I'm actually the odd person out right now because he's got off Broadway going on, and you have Twas the Night Before at MSG.
Correct, at the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, yeah. It's Cirque du Soleil.
And that's right. It's Cirque du Soleil's first family show.
Wow.
And it's a Christmas show. First time Cirque has taken on Christmas.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm going this Sunday, which by the time this podcast comes out, we'll have a cast.
And I have to tell you, you're going to love it because there are great hip hop dancers in it.
Oh, really?
They're amazing.
Wait, can like little kids, like 5-year-olds go to this?
Yeah. So actually our demographic is 6 and above, but of course 5, even 4-year-olds who like get it, like are totally fine.
Oh my God, I'm coming to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no intermission. So it's straight through. It's 85 minutes.
It's only there, though, through what date?
December 29th.
You could go on Christmas, though, because you don't celebrate
Actually,
Christmas.
I'm working Christmas. Oh, Christmas Day. Yeah. Are they on Christmas Day?
No, we are giving the cast off Christmas Day.
Christmas Eve, I have three
shows of my
own.
It's not an all-Jewish cast.
I actually was going to do, like, Jewish shows, but then I said, you know what? Like, I could do Christmas Eve. Everybody else is not Jewish in the show, you know? And then I got another comedy spot, so I'm actually doing 3 shows that day.
Wow.
Yay. But you know, it's interesting you said that being a kid's show because I just went with my daughter to see Peter Pan at the Queens College, fully thinking that it was a Theater Works thing, and they're usually great.
Yeah.
But thinking that it would be like music and a little bit more involved, and like it was fine. The kids had fun, but just it wasn't, right? It wasn't like exactly the over-the-top kind of walk out, and they'd be like, that was so great. It was just kind of like a fun show, and
yeah,
I don't need
still
to crap
at the,
on them.
They're
but.
Still at the age where you need more action than dialogue. Like
yeah,
they need to see
a little
stuff
bit,
happening.
Stuff like that. And like, you know, look, I took my daughter to see Frozen off Broadway, and I'm watching it the whole time. Like,
on Broadway?
Yeah, on Broadway. Off.
I meant on. I was on like, Broadway.
Wow. I don't think Disney knows about that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a girl throwing ice at another girl and like snow that they get from the freezer. But I was blown away. I was watching it like freaking out. The ice goes up the wall. I was like, whoa. Yeah. And my daughter just kept, 5 years old, she kept hitting me going, stop. Stop it. And she was watching. just kind of eyes open, investigating, right? Yeah. So it is interesting how they take it in a little bit differently, but I do agree that it needs to be spectacle for them so that they can follow the rest of the story.
Well, there is nothing more spectacle than Cirque du Soleil.
Now, we're going.
So we took Ella to Cirque du Soleil when she was about three or four out at the stadium, and she really enjoyed it. I mean, it, at the time, she doesn't remember it now,
right?
But she, I mean, those are shows that there is nonstop action. So.
True, and you can take, you know, younger kids to any Cirque du Soleil show, but typically those are 12 and up is sort of the demographic that we think of when we're thinking of those shows and making those shows. Whereas, you know, this was clearly, it's all families. We have multi-generational, is literally grandparents, parents, grandkids coming to these shows.
Well, I remember the first one I saw, I think, was Mystere in Vegas.
Yeah.
And that was a little, like, sexual. I was like, this is a little erotica out there.
Can be. Depends on the act.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
All right, I'm going to that one, too.
Okay, so let's go back, and we'll go to our HR portion, our humor resource portion. Tell us what your current job title is.
So my current job title, which was the night before, is consulting producer.
Okay. And is this your dream career?
It is. It really is. I mean, I think along the way I thought I had many dream careers, but ultimately, I mean, this is it. There is nothing like creating something that people consume live. It is such a great feeling to just keep that alive, to keep that tradition alive, that people need to come out, especially in this day and age, and just see a story together. There's nothing better than that immediate reaction. Sometimes it's not a good reaction, but
the energy,
just the response, just the knowing that you have to engage. You cannot lay back. When you're at a live something, whatever it is, you just need to be present and engaged in that moment. And it's beautiful.
And was that always your dream, or was your dream to be on stage? Did it change?
I've never ever wanted to be on stage.
Okay.
I think I've always sort of in the back of my head thought, you know, I wanted to be, I think when I was really young, I think at some point I thought, oh, I'll be a movie director. I don't, you know, not even knowing what that was when you're like 8 or 9. But I think I've always loved storytelling, but not written storytelling.
Okay.
And always just had a dream of that. Always. And then as I got older, I thought, oh, I just want to be a producer. And started to understand more and more what that was. And I've been a producer in other mediums, but certainly theater is the best medium.
So explain just for our listeners a little bit more specifically of the coordinating producer role that you do on TWAS.
So,
what does that entail?
So I'm a consulting producer for Cirque du Soleil on it.
Consulting.
No, that's okay. And so my job, they hired me because I'm a New York producer and Cirque du Soleil is based out of Montreal.
Got it.
And a lot of great French Canadians that work for that company, but they really needed an American producer on this to even, you know, from the very beginning to go in and just, there's some reticence about doing Christmas and because Cirque du Soleil is not, you know, they're
non-denominational.
Yeah, they're non-denominational and they're multicultural. And I was like, in New York, and we actually started the show in Chicago, there's so much of a Christmas tradition, no matter your ethnicity, your religious background or just... It becomes just about even sitting here like in the Comedy Strip Live, there's a Christmas tree in the corner. I mean, it's everywhere, whether you believe or not.
It's in our buildings, in our lobbies.
Exactly. So I said, Christmas is okay, and lean into Christmas, and let's do this. And so it's my job then to bring the whole team together and shepherd it along its way from the creative meetings to the production meetings to really making sure it all comes together to that one vision that we all have and that's where we end up. And then, of course, I also have to make sure we end up there in sort of certain economic parameters and other production parameters and creative parameters. So
if you were going to say, like, one step back from stage as far as, like, the curtain goes up, where do you fall? Like, two steps back?
I'm at the very beginning. And by the time the curtain goes up on that first performance, it's not in my hands anymore.
And
I have brought on that team that have created that show. And then when the curtain comes up, my job is done.
And how long was the process from beginning to...
This was a very, very quick process. We started this in May.
Wow. So was there a script written in May?
So Cirque du Soleil shows, you know, they don't have it like a script as we would know it. Like you're doing your Shakespeare. It's not like a script like that. It's definitely coming up with story concepts and then developing. Every Cirque du Soleil has a story through line. But there's no spoken word. Our show is based on the famous poem, which was The Night Before Christmas. So we do have some lines from that poem scattered throughout. But it definitely May started with, hey, let's do Twas the Night Before Christmas and take it from there. And then that's, you just start having creative meetings every week.
When you say like creative, the whole team creative meetings, is that choreographers? Is that like, where does that originate from?
Yeah, so it starts, we have a great director writer.
Right.
James Hadley, who's amazing. Okay. And it kind of starts with his vision of, he knew exactly what the show needed to be.
Okay.
You know, it definitely needed a bit of a through line. There's a father-daughter story that you follow. The daughter's a teenager. She falls out of love with Christmas. She's too, you know, she's worried about her Instagram and taking pictures and, you know, TikTok and throwing the woe and all that kind of stuff.
Reality.
And then the magic of the poem takes over and sucks them into that world. And through the magic of that poem, she finds her true Christmas spirit and the light of Christmas. And they reunite and enjoy the poem together.
Wow. So is there a pool of Cirque du Soleil performers that you just pull from? I mean,
we have
because it's a pretty specific talent.
It is a very specific talent. And Adesia Moreno is the acrobatic choreographer and casting director for this particular show. Cirque du Soleil has an incredible casting department who literally spend every day, 365 days a year, going out into the world looking for talent that does acrobatics. And they find incredible, incredible artists. And in this show, we have 25 artists that Adesia working, you know, with the idea of the storyline and trying to figure out sort of what acts would kind of help bring that general story idea to life. So, for example, our girl, our lead character, Michelle Clark, is a great hula hoop artist. And
how old is she playing this teenager?
She is not a teen. Okay. She's not a teen, but in the tradition of,
does she,
you know,
look like a teen?
Yeah, she does. I mean, through the magic of costume and makeup and performance and her acting ability.
Well, the girl on in Mockingbird right now is a full on, or the one who was nominated. I think she won, actually, maybe.
Yeah, Celia Keenan Bolger.
Yeah, she was a full on adult and she was playing.
I'm going to see that
Scout.
January 4th.
Right, just like Idina Menzel, you know. Yeah. She was, when she played Elphaba was a teenager.
Yeah.
Idina Menzel was not a teenager.
No.
It's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
So is there a company of sorts, like, you know, the next show that Cirque does that you would pull from this group or previous groups?
So Cirque du Soleil has about, I want to say, 28 shows currently running. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So
in this country or all over the world?
All over the world.
Wow.
There's 8 now in Las Vegas. So
8 versions?
8 shows
eight
in
shows.
Las Vegas. There's Mystère that you've seen.
Is O still
what?
There?
O is still
what,
there.
At each hotel?
The Beatles?
Theater?
They have a relationship with MGM, so a lot of the MGM theaters.
Whoa.
Have you seen a Cirque show?
I don't think so.
Wow, you've
got to go.
You're
totally missing
one.
Out on the magic.
Yeah. You should try to take your daughter at least. Your son's probably too young. I mean,
how old is your daughter?
She's 5 and a half.
He's
2 and a half, but he gets into, like, you know, stuff like that, flying around.
Yeah.
He might get into it.
Totally. And we have a cast member in this show who his mom took him to see some type of circus show when he was like 8. And he was like, I want to do that. And he had a lot of energy. And she was like, great, I'll sign you up for gymnastics. And boom, now he's in
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah,
that's how he is. He taught himself how to tumble and he jumps something all the time. And I'm like, I need to get him in gymnastics because he's just all over the place.
Totally. Yeah. And then he can grow up and be in a Cirque du Soleil.
There you go. Okay, so let's take a step back. Wait, we never talked about the job you had that blew.
Oh, yeah. What's a job that blew?
Oh, my God. The job that blew. Okay, so truly the first job I ever had that blew, and it's indicative of how I felt about kids now, then, but not now. The first job I ever had was my first babysitting job. It blew. I hated it. And
why?
I never babysat after that.
Why?
Oh, my God. The kid was a brat.
And it was only one kid?
One kid.
How old were you?
Braddy. I was like in high school.
How old was he?
16.
He was like 6. Terrible. Wanted everything. I want this. My parents let me have this. He actually like told me he could have Dimetap. I guess he liked the way it tasted.
Stop.
Like grape.
He was self-medicating at 6.
Self-medicating at 6.
I wonder where he is now.
I know, right? His parents
He's a pharmacist.
Big time smokers and own like 5 cats. Terribly allergic to cats.
How did you
terribly
get this job? Why did you say yes to this job?
I don't know. But I was like, okay, I should start babysitting in high school. I should start
$5
making money,
an
right?
Hour?
Probably not.
Probably $2 at
no.
that time.
I made $1 in Ohio. $1. But then I moved here and $20
an hour now. No, I know
it's crazy.
It's a racket.
That's why we don't go anywhere. Exactly. Ella goes where we go. We're good. That's why I stopped at one. I'm like, well,
yeah, you know what? The new $7.99 a month. It's called Disney Plus. There it is. Right.
There you go.
You're like, by the time this movie ends, we'll be back.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And it's this marathon, we should say.
Oh my gosh! Wow. So did you quit right away that night?
I called my mom during the middle of it, and I was just like, this is just terrible. And she's like, you can't leave. You have to stick it out.
Wait, did you give him the Dimetapp?
I called my mom. I was like, Mom, he wants Dimetapp. And she's like, well, I guess it won't hurt him.
Stop.
I was like, okay.
He was drunk.
She's like, yeah, but he's doing lines of coke off the kitchen table.
I mean, just awful. And I never babysat again. And then it was like, I can't put these kids. What's
so you're
the
saying
kids?
The first night of being a mom, you gave them Dimetapp. Is that what it was?
Meanwhile, she didn't have just one. She had two at the same time.
Well, they split the Dimetapp.
I know. Wow. And who knew? Like, I never, like, after that experience, I was like, I'm never having kids. This is awful. But now I love it. Now it's like the greatest thing ever, right?
I always loved kids. Always.
You did.
Babies. Oh, I love them.
Me too. I didn't realize I loved babies until I had babies.
Me too.
I like kids, but babies. I want to know.
Oh, no. I love babies.
Eating the
toddlers.
Chubby little.
Oh, I love babies.
You know what it is? It's their innocence. It's they're so innocent and new, and they just don't know all the bad shit out there. And I just love their little.
I think it's just that they get like bottom line humor. You know what I mean? It's like real soon. You don't have to. It's
you
no
just
thinkers.
Make a noise.
Noise. You get a laugh. You're happy.
No, my nephew the other day, my brother was saying bacon wrapped scallops. Yeah. And he was hilarious. It was the funniest thing that kid ever heard.
Bacon wrapped scallops.
We drove by to pull over the road one time. And there was literally an alpaca farm, like right next to where we were. And for some silly reason, dad, me being like, alpaca. I was going like this, alpaca. It still, to this day, if I do that, has them on the floor for no reason. You know,
best audience
you know how
ever.
Good that is as a comedian to be like, that's all I have to
and
do?
And then he goes out to an audience of adults and they don't get
like,
it. He's
alpaca.
Like, you don't
like,
get
you got
it.
You're not getting a spot here.
Wow.
My kids have better sense of humor than you do.
All right. So career evolution, mm-hmm. Jaina. So you said you moved here in 93.
Correct.
And what did you go to school for? What did you go to undergrad?
Well, you know, typical... That generation, were we Gen Xers? Are we Gen
yes,
Xers?
Yes, we're badass Gen Xers.
We're badass Gen Xers who graduated like there was no jobs, no economy, right?
Right.
And so, of course, I studied liberal arts. I was a history major at the University of North Carolina.
Wow. And so when you moved to New York, what did you think you were going
to
do?
Right. Well, to be fair, in college, I always did internships in news media.
Okay.
Television journalism, worked at the TV journalism show on the campus, and knew I went to New York, moved to New York and worked in media, and I ended up getting a job in PR.
Right.
For the insurance industry.
Right.
And you starred in one of
a TV segment on a renter without insurance.
That's right. That's right. It's important to get your renter's insurance.
Is
I remember
it,
that.
I've heard that it's not, actually.
Well, if you think you're going to get broken into.
I mean, I've been paying for years, and the one time I think I lost my makeup bag or something, they're like, sorry, you have a $200 deductible.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's what I was saying.
Okay, great. Like, And then when I got married, my rings, mm-hmm. I was paying, you know, to keep them protected.
Yes.
And then I realized, like 10 years in, I'm rebuying these fucking rings. Like, I'm just going to, at this point, I'm not paying insurance anymore. If I lose them, I lose
right,
them.
Right.
I'm sorry. But why would I pay for them twice?
Exactly. Exactly. So, yes, you were a star of that.
Yes.
So, start out in PR for the insurance industry. And then.
And how long did you do that job? Because you always.
Like 4 years.
Okay. Because you were pretty, you had longevity in your jobs.
I did. I tend to have longevity. Exactly.
I love that people can gauge their careers on mine.
Exactly.
Like, well, I was at that job 3 times as long as Brianna was at her job, so I'm doing something right.
Totally, totally. So, I was there for a while, and then really want to get back again into that producing and realize that, you know, you do PR, that you're basically like producing stories in, you know, your head that you want other people to then produce and put on TV or the radio or whatever. And I was like, I miss producing. I mean, when I was in college, you know, I would produce these TV shows. I mean, broadcast journalism, but still I would like produce these shows. And I just miss being on that side of it. And it was right when, this is how old we are, the internet was kind of burgeoning. And so I switched sides and went, switched from the PR side to the news side and started working at the Wall Street Journal online.
And then how long were you there?
I think I was there like 4 years.
Okay, so that's 8 years. You are now, how old were you when you moved here?
I was like 23. So maybe I was at one of those longer.
Okay, because those were the two careers you had before you made the transition.
Correct, because, and so maybe I did PR for longer than I think.
4 years didn't sound long
enough.
No,
I think I did it longer because I started the journal when I was 30.
Okay.
So yeah, so longer.
You were there for a long time.
A long time.
And what exactly is a producer at the Wall Street Journal Online doing? Is it again? Yeah. And you know what I find interesting about everybody's journey is there are certain things that do connect. Rarely does anybody take a total left turn. There's always something that connects them to where they came from, to where they're going now. You know, even if it's like a marketing angle, or you know, Cindy, where she you know understood you know everything about how to like you know start a brand and build
Cindy
a brand.
Gallup.
Yeah, Cindy Gallup. Mm-hmm. So what I'm starting to hear from you is that this producing aspect of behind the scenes, putting things together, building the story, pushing it out there. Mm-hmm. So specific with the Wall Street Journal, what were you doing there?
It's a lot of the same thing, exactly. It is bringing people together to create something. Mm-hmm. And I always say about producers, it's not like I have any one skill. You know, I'm not the set designer. I'm not the costume designer. But I work with those people and bring them together and help them fulfill their vision and make sure their vision fits with sort of what we all start out as wanting to create. It's the same as an online producer.
Okay.
Same exact thing. So that's how I transitioned. I was working at the Wall Street Journal Online. We went through we went through September 11, 2001. Right. And
was it just stories, or were you producing media for them too?
It's online journalism, so it's like producing the media that again gets packaged with the written story, and so it's like putting all that together.
Got it.
I was a producer for them where we relaunched the website, so really working with all the designers and the coders and figuring out sort of what we wanted this thing to be.
Got it.
With them, I produced the launch of Barron's Online, which is the magazine of the Wall Street Journal. So it's bringing all these people together to create something, and without having any one particular skill to do any one particular thing, right? It's really just bringing everyone together and being like, okay, we're going to have this one vision and we're going to go forward with this one vision and we're going to keep that vision and we're going to make this thing.
And so during both of those careers, you were consistent about your love of Broadway. I mean, we're always going to the newest shows, getting the standing room only tickets. I mean, what shows? Just throw some shows.
Yeah, I mean, I've loved theater my whole life and always like went to theater. And when I moved to New York, I couldn't wait to go see shows. If I had like a bad day at work, I'd be like, I'm just going to go see a Broadway show tonight. Like, I'll just go to TKTS and see what's up. So like Rent, loved Rent, saw Rent 3 times, standing room only, original cast.
Me too, original cast.
Love them. But yeah, I would just go see anything. In fact, I now joke that I think I saw more theater before I worked in theater. Because now I like work at, you know, I work all the time and I work at night. And it's hard to
it's an interesting way to use your money. I mean, you know, people go out and drink or people go out and do other things. And I'm not saying you didn't, but, you know, if you had the wherewithal to be like, I'm going to go spend $67.
She drank too. I can attest to that.
Yes, exactly. I drink with this one.
Okay, you just ruined my point.
Sorry. But she was getting standing room only tickets. So she was able to balance.
Balance my social life.
What I'm envious of in that regard is that being opportunistic in that way of like, this is what will make my soul happy right now. I'm going to go spend that money in a way that will do that, as opposed to, I got to save my money. I'm going to sit on the couch and not do anything and watch a movie.
Right. Totally. And that's what changed my life. So after September 11th, you know, it was a hard time for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm working at the Wall Street Journal Online. We were based at the World Financial Center. So right across the street. We had to move to New Jersey, where Dow Jones had an office. And, you know, it was a really depressing time to be talking about the news and working in that industry. And I went to a Broadway show. And
which one do you remember?
I think it was Hairspray.
Okay. That's such a good uplifting one.
And I was reading the bio of the producer, Margot Lyons, and she said, in her bio, it said, adjunct professor at Columbia University for producing and management in theater. And I was like, I'm a producer.
That's a thing.
And I was like, you could go to grad school to learn how to do it in theater. I was like, I'm doing that. I got to get out and do something and produce something that makes people happy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was my whole goal. I was like, I want to produce something that makes people happy.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to like decide in your head you were going to do that and then actually hit go.
I feel like that was probably, I mean, you know, sort of the academic year played into that. So mm-hmm. I think as soon as I found out about it, I was like, what's the next academic year that I can apply and try to get into this thing?
At Columbia?
At Columbia. So I think months went by because, you know, I probably found out, decided I wanted to do it in like December, and the next academic year started in August.
August, right.
And that was 2004.
And 2004 was when I started grad school.
Okay. And how long do you go to grad school for?
Yeah, so that's a 3-year program.
Wow.
And but in your third year, you're supposed to be writing your thesis. But by the time I got to my third year, I already had a job. I was the assistant company manager at 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee on Broadway.
Oh, wow. I never saw that.
It's Barfay. Fun
show. It's Barfay. And I, in the cast that I did it, by the time I got there, Josh Gad was playing that role.
Oh, he followed up Vogel?
Uh-huh. Yep, exactly.
Wow.
Yep. Vogel?
So when you were pursuing mm-hmm. the 3-year degree mm-hmm. or whatever, were you working or fully a student?
I did. The great thing about Columbia, and I'll just tout the Columbia program because it was the best, is that it's in New York City, so you can intern all the time. So I mm-hmm. immediately started interning. So again, that maybe talking about jobs that blow. Maybe that was the hardest thing. I mean, I'm a 34-year-old successful career woman.
And we need to acknowledge that. How old were you when you decided?
34.
34, people. So if you are at a stage in your life where you don't think something is possible because you're over 30 or, you know, she's got more to tell of the challenges that came with doing it later in life, but she did it. So 34 and you're an intern.
34, also, I'm an intern. After being a successful career person, I'm like making copies. Seriously.
That's what you were doing.
Oh my God, I was making copies of script. I was doing bank deposits. Right. I was like, you name it, I did the grunt
work. But there's also something about you having been through some life already and producing in other ways that almost like, does every third year have a job by then?
I have to say that's a good point. Nancy Gibbs, who was the general manager of Spelling Bee, when she hired me, she said, "You're an adult. You've like been there."
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's why, and I was like, "Great, yes, I'm an adult. Hire me."
Right. No, but also, it helps. It has to help in that regard, and mm-hmm. and that's a point I want to bring up is that, you know, if you're focused and determined like what you said you were when you saw mm-hmm. that, then that's a new fire, a new spark. And then you start using all your experience to propel you to the next. So I'm not 34 and 10 years older than the next youngest person in my class. Oh, my God, they're going to outwork me. It's I'm 34 and I have 10 years more experience
and
than
focus.
You. I focus on experience and I dare you to try to that's the energy I'm getting from
exactly.
you. It's more of like bring it. I
totally.
Have this, like, I'm a woman who knows what she wants now.
And that passion's fueled because
you've worked. Like, you were intimidating to them as opposed to, like, oh, if you went back to, let's say, a financial thing and said, oh, I'm going to go work on the floor as a stockbroker, these kids mm-hmm. who could do it at 23 years old. Don't,
yeah.
You know, now, you know, whew, you know, but there's something different about your
exactly.
feeling.
Exactly.
Your
no,
here.
I would just, you know, I don't know how other industries work, but one, I was very lucky to have a very supportive husband.
Well, that was what my next point was. Your personal life, you'd
yes.
gotten married
that
quit the job.
Correct. I got married in May, and then in August, September, I started grad school.
Right.
So, like, I...
Was he working
yeah.
at the time?
So she did have some financial support.
So I
which...
did have a very, like, financially, emotionally, mentally supportive husband
Good.
Who was amazing. But I would say, like, to me, I looking at grad school, and again, I don't know how other industries work, but... You know, it's an expensive investment. And mm-hmm. it's like you guys said, by the time I made that investment, mm-hmm. I knew exactly what I wanted. I knew exactly where I was headed. I could manifest it in my head.
Sure.
I knew exactly where I wanted to go.
How freeing is that?
Yeah, exactly. It was great. It was
right.
great.
Well, and then so you were finished in 2007, correct, with your degree? Or
correct. Okay. I mean, that's when I was finishing. I have to say I did not actually ever turn in my thesis because I was working so much.
Oh,
but
we won't tell.
Did you get a degree anyway?
No. So I attended the Columbia University MFA
so
program.
So then here's a question. How mm-hmm. necessary, okay, in your perspective,
yeah.
of the job you do now,
yeah.
is it that you went through that program
right.
to do what you're doing
It was
now?
Incredibly – I mean, I met so many people in that program. Mm-hmm. All my professors were – they were professionals, are professionals in the theater industry.
Oh.
So I met so many people. Exactly. So I met so many people that I still interact with today who are my professors in grad school. So it was incredibly, I mean, I did the 2 years of classwork and it was incredibly important. It just opened so many doors and it was the greatest thing I ever did, even though it, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it sucked to be an intern at 34.
Right. So did
how long did you do that for?
I mean, I did that. So the 2 years of classwork, I was an intern.
And do you think you got those internships because you were at Columbia? I mean, did it have?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So, I mean,
it was worth it.
It was yeah, totally. Because there's no other way I could have transitioned into theater. I needed Columbia to open the doors to that network.
So it's one of those examples where the schooling actually does behoove you to take it.
Absolutely.
You know, you because just don't of have the doors. You know, if you want me to ghostwrite your thesis, I'll do it for you.
But now at this point, I think I'd have to pay them more tuition. Yeah. I'm like, I think my husband
just
like,
to submit
no.
it and get the degree. You know what? I'll just Photoshop you a degree. You put
thank
it up on the
you.
Wall.
Thank
so,
you.
Okay. So you, in 2007, right? Get pregnant? Or 2008.
2008.
You are pregnant now.
Yes.
So you're.
And what happened
are
before that?
Interning?
Like lots of sex before that, and then eventually. Are I you, don't. I want to know the process.
Yeah, you want to know how it works.
So are you interning when this happened?
No. So by the time I got pregnant, I was working for a company called Base Entertainment.
Okay.
And their focus was producing live theater in developing markets around the world. So they still produce a lot in Las Vegas, and then at the time they were also branching out into sort of other developing theatrical markets. So I produced things in Sao Paulo, in Singapore, in Johannesburg. So, but all musical theater. So we would license musical.
So you were flying all over the world.
Correct.
And wow. Your husband, just general, what does he do?
So my husband has a great job. He is he buys all the chemicals and things like that for a water company. I love him dearly, and he's 1,000% smarter than me, but I sometimes say he has a nondescript MBA job.
He's a Chandler job. Chandler
yeah.
Bing.
Totally.
Nobody
that
knows.
Was
totally
the
Chandler
Bing. Description of somebody. He buys the chemicals that go in the water.
Nondescript MBA job.
Okay.
That's what he has. But yeah,
but
Chandler
you were,
Bing.
It allowed you to travel like that.
Exactly. I mean, we have twins. And
well, we're not
before
there
we
yet.
Get to that,
we're
but
not
I'm
even
saying,
there yet.
Sao Paulo and all these other jobs you were taking before the kids.
Right. No, a lot of that was after. So I started working for Base Entertainment.
Okay.
I think they first hired me as like a production assistant, production associate, and then I became associate producer and then producer with them.
And so were you traveling before the kids or that happened mainly after?
No, I was traveling before the kids.
Okay.
I was doing shows in Las Vegas for them. I think my first show in Las Vegas for them was the Wayne Brady Las Vegas show called Making It Up. With the
like improv,
making shit up, but right. The SH were sort of blanked out. It was totally improv show, greatest show, funniest man I've ever met besides
really?
You two.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
is he really like
incredibly funny?
In
I
person?
Loved him. So I was in Vegas doing that, you know, working on that show, putting that show up.
Because he came out of nowhere for me. Like he was all
the
of a sudden.
The talk show suddenly, right?
No, for me it was Whose Line Is It Anyway? I never saw this guy before in my life. And then he was on Whose Line?
Mm-hmm.
And then the talk shows and all these hostings and everything. But I was like,
who is
this
guy? But he also went like suddenly just was like nowhere. Like he like was really big and then
yeah,
he's
maybe,
kinda
but
disappeared.
He came out of nowhere. Like
yeah,
where did he
yeah.
come from?
But
before
he went away just like he came. He was like out of nowhere and then he's gone.
Yeah. So I mean I know like he was a comic, you know, yeah. And he worked a lot of he worked at one of the theme parks in Orlando.
Right.
I saw him host Good Miss America in 2002 in Atlantic City.
Yeah. Could have, yeah. But super, the funniest improv person I think I've ever seen.
Wow.
So, okay. So, you decided you wanted to have babies.
Yes.
In the midst of this, you are doing totally. Your dream job. You are traveling the world.
Yes.
You're going to throw baby into this. And then, voila, you get two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one.
So, did you have to travel while you were pregnant with twins?
I did. So, I can remember, one of the shows that I produced for Base Entertainment was Jerry Mitchell is this Broadway director choreographer. And he created what's called Broadway Bears. Have you ever seen that? It's a fundraiser for Equity Fights AIDS.
Oh, CARES. Broadway CARES.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But he created Broadway Bears.
Oh, okay.
Which is a strip-a-thon every year. It's Broadway performers who do this fundraiser. It's huge. I mean, they raise millions and millions of dollars every year. It's been going on for like 15 years now or something.
It's a strip-a-thon?
Yeah.
They do this strip show, the striptease show.
Yeah.
And it's all these Broadway performers who get up there. Anyway, it's wildly successful. So
can I do this show?
No.
No, you have to be on Broadway.
No.
I'm off Broadway.
It doesn't count.
Okay.
Oh.
Keep so going. Anyway, so
would love to
so he created the show. So my boss at the time, Scott Zeiger, was like, oh, we should do that show, but like commercialize it and do it in Vegas. So he hired Jerry Mitchell to do this show that Jerry created called Peep Show. So I'm pregnant with my girls. And Jerry and I go to Vegas, and we decide that maybe we should go to, like, even though we're creating, like, this show, you know, that was very tasteful and had incredible talent, and, like, you know, it was a very well professional. Anyway, long story short, we're like, maybe we should go check out all the other shows like this in Las Vegas.
Right.
So we go to, you know, everything in Las Vegas from the most tasteful, like, folly show to sort of the not so tasteful shows to understand where we want to fit in this world. So anyway, and I can remember we went to nightclubs to figure out what the nightclub scene was like.
And how pregnant were you?
Oh my God, I was like 4 or 5 months pregnant.
And with twins,
wow. So Jerry and I are just bopping around all the nightclubs,
taking
checking things
notes,
out.
Though. Taking notes.
Wow.
Taking notes.
What
like
came
what's
out
hip
of
and
that?
Happening in Vegas. Just kind of trying to understand sort of what the vibe was, you know?
So, okay, so then you had these glorious babies premature.
So then I had them, yes.
And that was in October of 08.
Correct.
Are twins always premature? Because I just heard somebody else had twins.
It's common.
They can, yes, often. And I was on bed rest. Holy I did my job for 2 months from my bed.
Wow.
Because I was just like on the phone, on my computer, on the phone, on my computer.
Wow. Okay.
Which is not how I prefer to do my job.
Sure.
I really feel
no.
like it's a hands-on yeah. thing, but...
So you had them, and then in January, you had to leave them.
Correct, because we started rehearsals in Las Vegas in January.
Yes.
For which show?
For Peeps. Jerry Mitchell's Peep Show.
Wow.
Starring Mel B of the Spice Girls.
Spicy.
So how long were you in Vegas?
That show, I think, opened mid-April. So again... amazing husband that I have. Mm-hmm. He's incredible.
Right. But were you emotionally, I mean.
It was totally emotionally difficult.
So difficult.
It was emotionally incredibly hard because you know, to produce a show like that is demanding anyway.
You had 3 babies. Literally.
Yeah, totally three babies. I had a show and 2 babies.
Wow.
And it was emotionally difficult. I have to say like, baby weight dropped off because I was just
such
so emotionally stressed that I drank coffee and ate granola bars and that was
like
for like months.
How were you dealing with being separated from them? And
this
is
not
a judgment.
It was just hard. Yeah, I mean, it was just hard, but I knew that my husband loved them dearly.
Mm-hmm. And you had a village helping.
And I had a village helping. We had an amazing nanny who would come during the day. Fur is what the girls started to call her when they could talk.
Fur-fur.
Who is still like she's not their babysitter now, but we actually just FaceTime with her last week.
Right. But that's still like, $2 an hour to babysit.
Yeah,
to
a little something like $2 an hour. Yes.
Well, and both you and Sam are from North Carolina, right?
He's and from we're from North Carolina,
right,
so our
so
family
no
was
family.
Around, but we would fly in family.
Yeah.
His brother would came in. His sister came in. I had my roommate from college at the time was between jobs, and so I called Mark. I was like, Mark, you got to get to. We were living
New
in Hoboken at the
yeah.
time. I was like, you got to get to Hoboken, spend a weekend with Sam. So, he needs some adult like
man
contact.
Time. So,
yes.
Are you looking at this opportunity at that moment of your mm-hmm. life? Right, everything mm-hmm. leading up to that, the babies come. This giant opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Was this? Do you remember? Was this something that you felt you had to take? That another opportunity could come along, or this was it? This was what you'd been working for.
I mean, I don't even think I had those sort of binary decisions. Mm-hmm. It was just like, this is my job, and I'm just going to keep going and do my job.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah.
Well, and so since then, you've traveled, you've mentioned
and then
Singapore,
I would still travel,
Brazil,
yes, exactly.
And Germany.
Yep. Right, like, so then after that, we started, Base Entertainment started doing, you know, I developed a show for them in Buenos Aires. I did Priscilla, Queen of the Desert in Sao Paulo.
Wow.
Best cast I've ever seen of that show.
Wow. And so and that takes you away for months at a time.
Months at a time. And again, my husband, amazing.
So, you know, it, again, consistent themes, you know, for, in general, you know, it is important to have good teams, people that believe
totally
in you
good teams.
On the personal and professional mm-hmm. side. There is a degree of sacrifice that needs to be made in whatever you mm-hmm. do. You know, most of our guests, not most, that's not true. A handful of our guests say that a lot of their success came at the expense of family. You did both. You know, you had mm-hmm. family and you gave up a career and you tried something else and you were mm-hmm. good at it. But there's still degrees that you have to stay eye on the prize. And tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
on
no, it's true.
You
know, I mean, no one also, ever has it all, right?
Right.
You know, there's
right.
always you can never have it all at the same time.
But it's important to see the realistic nature of all this for pursuing your dream job there is, or the, your dream career, your dream situation. Mm-hmm. You can make everything happen. You are still a mom of.
Right, I'm still a mom.
Girls,
yes.
You know?
And, now in the fifth grade.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
And did there become a time and age where when you were leaving was not like that?
Yes, it is definitely easier to leave before they can speak. Now, you know, now I just, earlier this year, I was in Germany for 3.5 months doing another Cirque du Soleil show.
Wow.
And, you know, it's harder now that they're older. Certain things make it easier. You know, now we can FaceTime, they can email me, mm-hmm. but it's not the same as being there.
Right.
So it's definitely gets harder the older they get, and they let me know that. And to be fair, it is not easy for them.
Do they ever come with you, travel with you, visit you?
No, because they, you know, they have school, they have their mm-hmm. things.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they're older, they will look back and go, my mom was a baller.
Right.
Check her out.
Right.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
They will. No,
I mean,
not
they'll be
hopefully.
Telling their therapist, but they will
exactly.
definitely acknowledge that,
they'll
Jaina.
Definitely be telling their therapist,
yeah.
But yes.
Jaina, I mean, also your side. Yes, you may be the person doing it, but I know this is not easy on you. I am sure mm-hmm. there are nights in your hotel room that you are crying or you are upset
yeah.
and you are missing them. I mean, no one
totally.
Thinks that, you know, it's both sides.
Exactly. It is. But I will say this too. You know, one thing I think, especially if you're just talking about now working moms and not necessarily anyone who changes careers, but working moms, in some ways it's helpful because I can just focus. When I'm home, I'm freaking home. Like I am 100% there with my family
mm-hmm.
and I am as focused could be. And then when I go away to do a show, I have to go away and do a show. So I do find it harder at the times when I'm trying to do a show and I'm home. Can be a little bit more difficult
mm-hmm.
right.
because you don't have that line.
Right.
But having that line of now I'm with my family, other job go away, and then I'm at the job. But it's more difficult when I'm producing stuff in New York, for sure.
Right.
Really?
So what's mm-hmm. next after?
So Cirque du Soleil has also, I'm going to be the creative producer for another show at Cirque du Soleil, but by their sister company. So Cirque du Soleil has gone on a buying rampage, and they've bought every live theatrical production company in the sun. They bought V-Star, which produces all these shows with Nickelodeon for the truly six and under crowd.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to be the creative producer of a Paw Patrol show.
Like a live show?
Live show.
I've
live
seen
show.
Their last
here?
One.
Here?
Yeah, a live show opens in October. It will tour around the U.S.
Wait, the one that with the guys in the suits on the stage, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. This is going to be the origin story of how they get their powers.
Oh.
I'm super
Coming
excited about
that
it.
One,
but
Paw
this
Patrol.
Means you get to stay.
Yeah, so the creative team will be here. We'll go away to do rehearsals probably in September, October. But yeah, hopefully we're still putting together the creative team, but hopefully our goal is that they are here and that we actually develop it here.
Where would it stage?
We would probably open it in Cedar Rapids, so we'd go out there somewhere.
Wait, Iowa?
Yeah.
And then what, tour it?
And then it tours.
Yeah.
But once it tours, I mean, I don't
so
have to
So you would
tour
develop it.
It
here, open it there,
yeah.
and then come back and do another project.
Yeah, exactly.
You let it go.
Totally.
And
so,
are you pretty consistent with getting project after project, or are there lulls?
I mean, now it seems to be knockwood. I mean, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
And I definitely... I look forward to, you know, it's great having this show here in New York, and mm-hmm. I would like to have more shows, I think, in New York. So I just got to start envisioning and manifesting what that next thing
okay.
is that
so
I want to produce.
I have two and a half questions. A, mm-hmm. biggest challenge of this career and keeping everything balanced and staying motivated,
mm-hmm.
okay? And second question is if you could really elaborate a little bit more on the, you know, what makes you different than an executive producer of a Hollywood film? I mean, I feel like you're coordinating and consulting and pulling in people and things from every side. And you're like, I know what has to happen in every area.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, could you see yourself being eventually, you know, a full-on EP of a show or a... I mean, what's
like
your,
a film?
I don't know, or a stage. Pretty, you know, could you take the next?
Yeah, I mean, I've been executive
with the,
producer.
My point is, mm-hmm. with the exception of being the money bags, mm-hmm. right? Could you be a? Do you envision yourself as really a head honcho producer from the top down? You know,
sure. Yeah,
I know somebody who just did Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
A good friend of ours, also Josh. Was in banking. I asked him to be on the show, but he lives in LA. But he was in banking for years, mm-hmm. and finally decided to make the jump. And he works for which company?
Bad Robots.
Bad Robots. And that's who's doing Star Wars.
Yeah, went. J. Abrams. He went and lived over there for the filming for like a year.
Yeah, he was in London for a year.
Good for him.
I would also not, from North Carolina.
Also from North Carolina. It's the best state ever, besides New York, New Jersey. So I don't. I would not want to do film. Again, I love theater. Mm-hmm. I love anything live. And I like producing live things.
Sure.
And that's what I like to do. I want it to be live.
Because I feel like that's what the progression is. But you also have that demeanor of like, you know, I don't need to be just the director or just the, I don't know all the titles. But like,
I could not be the director. Again, as a producer.
But putting it all
you're
together.
You're in charge of everything, right. Yet you have no one specific skill.
You could produce the Tonys. That could be your big one.
No, but that's the thing that most
I wouldn't
people
even
don't.
Produce that because that's a TV show.
Oh, right.
They don't know about what producing is. They, you know, people don't really know. And hopefully they get a little bit better idea now. But it is about connecting dots, solving problems.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm making things happen, keeping mm-hmm. people motivated. All right, you're the director, but like, we need this done. Let's go.
Yep.
Where's that guy? Get this guy.
And Josh, I think your first question was the biggest challenge.
Oh, the biggest challenge.
Oh, yeah,
too.
The biggest challenge of being a producer.
Well, just, you know, this whole
transition.
Journey.
Yeah. Well, this whole journey. I mean, it's, again, the biggest challenge was probably making copies when I'm 34. But that took a lot of like, woo, I really got to work on this ego, which maybe helped. I mean, the thing about being a producer is that yours is the last ego in the room that needs to be served, right? Mm-hmm. It is about everyone. You need everyone else's ego not to be necessarily served and stoked, but you need everyone performing at their best. So you need to give everything you have so that everyone in the room brings their A game. And sometimes that means at a detriment to what you might be needing at that time. You know, I can't really have a breakdown, but, you know, certainly someone from the creative team or the cast can have a breakdown and I'll be there for them and help them. We're going to get them through it. Mm-hmm. But and there's no one there to help me through it, so I just got to keep going.
Well, and I know you had mentioned a story of one of your stars telling you what a shit mom you were because you were not home with your babies.
Exactly. She told me, that, yes, she was making some questionable choices, I think, in her own personal life at the time. But decided to tell me that I was a terrible mom, even though my babies were home with their incredible loving father and supported by a village of
good
neighbors
yes.
and friends and family, even though those family were coming from afar. Wow. So, but I just had to sit there and take it because, you know, I needed to.
And this woman is a total asshole. So if anyone wants to know, just send me a message and I'll let you know who
we're talking
about. I would
love to give hints at this. Wow.
But we won't because, you know. Mm. All right, Jaina, I could talk to you all day because it's been years.
From a producing perspective, too, my friend Alexa. Alexis, who listens to this. Hi, Alexis. She would love all of these little points. She's also a producer in L.A., lit in TV, not stage.
And I don't know. Like, I wouldn't know how to produce a TV show.
Yeah, but it's the same general, you know, she has a job to do. You have a job, not just simply saying a job to do. I have to bring these components together and I have to make a sandwich.
Correct.
Here's the
You're
cheese and the thing. I got to get it in place so the guy can put the meat on the bread.
All at service of a story. It's all about storytelling at the end of the day.
Okay, we got to jump into our game, which is Broadway trivia for you.
I hope I know the answers.
All right, ready? We're going to go fast. So which titular Broadway character is the demon barber?
Stephen Sondheim.
Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm. Musical.
Yeah. You got it.
Totally escaped my mind.
Two words. ST.
Sweeney Todd.
Yes. Oh my God. Go, Josh.
Jeez. Groundbreaking musical, Chicago, opened in 1975 and was later revived in 1997. Name one of the two stars who appeared in the original and the revival, respectively.
Well, it was B.B. Newworth and Anne Rankin starred in the revival. Was Anne Rankin in the original?
No.
She was not.
No. The other one's a guy.
Who starred in the...
In the original,
and he worked with your the guy you love
Jesse
from
L. Martin. He worked with him.
Ding, ding.
Dun dun.
Oh my gosh, I don't.
Jerry Orbach.
Jerry Orbach.
Jerry Orbach, of course.
Which ball team is featured in Damn Yankees?
The Yankees.
No, Washington Senators.
Oh my God, jeez. Oh right, because they hate the Yankees. Yes.
This one I had no idea.
I had no idea.
Okay, wait, have I gotten any right?
Nothing. You're failing.
You got the first one. Failing.
Yeah, that was hard. She would have failed.
And
that
you got
one,
BB. We said only one. Go.
All right. She's gonna redeem herself right here. Okay. What was the name of Danny's gang in the Broadway version of Grease?
The Pink Ladies and the T-Birds.
No.
That was the movie.
It was the Burger Palace Boys.
Oh, the Burger
I
Palace
didn't know
Boys.
That. In what Broadway musical was the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas introduced?
In a Broadway show? Mm-hmm. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas?
Mm-hmm. You're crushing her. It's supposed
to be
easy.
Oh, my God.
It's also a movie.
White Christmas? Judy Garland. No.
Meet Me in St. Louis.
Meet Me in St. Louis.
What kind of music are they singing about in the Phantom of the...
Opera.
Opera, good, easy one. You nailed it.
She'll get this next one. Give her the next one.
Oh, okay, my God.
The producers of Avenue Q chose to not have the show tour the country, but instead try its luck playing in only one other city.
They opened in Las Vegas.
There you go. Woo! Gina,
what play
so
is coming back or musical is coming back to Broadway, and I'm super excited to see because I've never seen it, only the movie from 1960-something. The opposite of the East Side.
Oh, the West Side Story.
Oh, West Side Story.
So, yeah!
Good
awesome.
Job. All right. Jaina, thank you so much for being here. And
thank
it's
you.
So lovely to see you. Can you, do you have any social handles you want to give?
Sadly, I'm not a big social media person, but I will say hashtag Cirque Christmas, even though by the time you hear this, 'twas the night before by Cirque du Soleil at the Hulu Theater will have closed. But
we can maybe tease it, though, before we
yeah.
release
yeah.
it.
Hashtag well, I'm going to go Christmas. See it Sunday, so I'll yeah. tease it.
I would love for you I'll to take it. Me with you.
Okay. And also, Josh, what are your social handles?
The same. Follow me at Mr. Josh Hyman, MrJoshHyman.com. Check me out. Check out the website at Jobs Below Podcast. We're updating it all the time with links to all of our guests. So do that. Find us on all. What's the new one? We can be found on Alexa, Google.
Oh, yeah.
Now?
We're on Alexa.
We're
if
Alexa
you tell
now.
Her to play Apple Podcasts. Jobs Blow.
Jobs Blow. And please review, subscribe, share, word of mouth, at Jobs Blow Podcast. Share our posts. It just helps us get the word out there so we can do more of these. And hey, if you know any good stories or guests that could be on the podcast, please email us or anybody who wants to sponsor us.
Season 2's coming.
We would love for you to sponsor us. We need guests. Okay, we love you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jaina.
How do you document real life when real life's getting more like fiction each day? Headlines, breadlines blow my mind, and now this deadline, eviction or pay. Rain.